So when we talk about cost, again, cost is a term that's a little, what's your definition? So when we're talking about cost, are we talking about the type of service, the type of provider, the cost to whom? Are we talking about the cost to Medicare? Are we talking about the cost to the beneficiary? Are we talking about the cost to what the provider thinks they should be reimbursed? So again, I'm going to kind of define from the claims information and from the MedPAR file the methods that you can use and which specific variables are needed to what I'm going to determine calculating costs. So costs, again, when you're looking at the type of service or the provider, for the institution, you've got hospital, both inpatient and outpatient, which are separate types of files. You've got skilled nursing facility. You've got the home health. You've got hospice providers. And then for non-institutional, you have physicians. You have nurse practitioners, other types of practitioners. The one kind of exception, again, for those of you that have been through 101, you know that ambulatory surgery centers, freestanding ASCs, their facility charges are actually, our claims are actually in the carrier file as well, even though you wouldn't consider them non-institutional. And then there's DME suppliers. So when we're looking at the cost to whom, in the claims data, you can determine what the cost was or what Medicare reimbursed, what the cost was to the beneficiary, what their patient responsibility is. Again, from the claims data, you never know who paid the beneficiary's part of it. Do they have a Medigap insurance policy? Do they have some other kind of, are they a dual that maybe Medicaid picked up their coinsurance? All you know is that this portion is responsible by the beneficiary. There's another payer. You do know that Medicare maybe wasn't the primary payer in this case, that for this hospitalization it was a result of a car accident, so some kind of car insurance was the actual payer for this hospitalization. You don't know what type of payer, you just know it was another primary payer besides Medicare. And then you can calculate what is really due for all these separate pieces to the provider. Now, does that equate what the provider says it cost us to give this care to the beneficiary? That is for Faith to talk about tomorrow. But that is what we can look at as far as what the providers do in these data files. So the definition of cost, some people, again, Faith will talk about that. Yvonne talked about it this morning. Use cost to charge ratios. You can look at charges within the claims data as well. They do have total charges. They have non-covered charges. And they actually have submitted charges as well at the physician level. So there are charges in the files. Now, I'm going to talk briefly about them, but for my perspective, I never use charges to define costs. I use the claims data. I think charges are erroneous oftentimes. For those of you that may have, about a month ago, CMS released a quote-unquote a new data file that had for every top 100 DRGs for every hospital. They gave you the charges for these, what the Medicare reimbursed, and so on, a lot of the variables that we talked about it. They've been there all along, but they repackaged it, and all of a sudden the media thought, oh my gosh, this is something new. This is outrageous. They talked about, you know, these hospitals, hospital A to B could charge anywhere from $100,000 to $10,000 in these charges. What's going on? For those of you that are working with Medicare, you know enough to not to care what the hospital charges in some respect, because they don't pay based on what the charges are anymore. So again, when I look at costs, I don't look at charges. But some of you may be interested in that, and that will be Faith's discussion tomorrow. Some of the claim file variables that we'll be talking about is the DRG price, which is what we just tried to calculate, the Medicare payment or reimbursement amounts. What, again, I talk about the beneficiary responsibility, because we never really know who paid it, if there were primary or other payers that paid for that claim. And then, again, there are charges in the file. If you're using the MedPAR file, I actually recommend, if you're looking at inpatient and skilled nursing facility to look at costs, to use the MedPAR file, because they've gone to all the work from taking the inpatient and the skilled nursing facility standard analytical files and rolled up any claims that would have been associated with a particular stay into one record. So if I'm looking at long-term care hospitals, chances are if I'm in the hospital 90 days, that hospital has submitted more than one claim, you would find separate claims for that stay for potentially maybe two, one for 45 days, the other one for the last 45 days in the inpatient file. But the MedPAR file has already rolled up both of those claims and all the information into one record. So it's much easier to use when you're looking at costs variables to look at the whole record and not try to get the cost of that hospitalization from the two separate files. But if you wanted to use the standard analytical files, you do have inpatient, skilled nursing facility, home health, outpatient, and carrier. Currently, the MedPAR, I already mentioned, had just updated its record layout with a whole bunch of new variables that are related to a lot of these bundled payment initiatives, a lot of these modeling things. I currently don't have a file that has any data in it, so I don't know and won't be able to comment on that. But again, that would be another reason at this point to look at the MedPAR file. And I'll be going through each one of these claim types of file and how to calculate cost or reimbursement by Medicare, other payer, a beneficiary, and then the total due to the provider. So the MedPAR payment variables that you have, there is the DRG price, which is exactly what we just tried to do, is to calculate what that DRG amount would be. There's also a variable that gives you the outlier approved payment amount. Just know that that outlier amount actually gets into the payment amount. And then there's also a variable called total pass-through amount. Those are those amounts that are not included in a DRG price that are above and beyond and that you'd have to also account for if you're looking at costs. And then when you actually kind of get into the payment variables, you have a Medicare payment amount. Again, I briefly touched on the fact for that a couple of years, some hospitals could get low volume adjustment, additional add-on payments. That, too, is already included in the Medicare payment amount. So even though there's a separate field in the MedPAR file, you wouldn't have to add it into it. There's the beneficiary deductible. So these next three are related to the beneficiary. There's their coinsurance amount, their blood deductible. It's very rarely populated, but there is an amount that if a beneficiary goes into a hospital, uses a blood product, does not replace it, they will get charged a deductible. And then if there was another primary payer amount. So these are the actual names of the variables that you'd find in the MedPAR file to calculate what I'm going to refer to as costs. So if you were interested in looking what the payment made by Medicare, the beneficiary, the primary, you have to maybe use more than one variable. So to look within the MedPAR file, to look at the total payment made by Medicare, you actually have to sum two variables. That payment amount, which is essentially the DRG with any potential add-ons, including outlier amount, and then that total pass-through amount that might have had some things that were not included in a DRG payment. So you'd have to add up both of these in it to get to the actual total cost made by Medicare. So then if you're looking at what the beneficiary is responsible for, there's three variables that you would have to sum. You have the inpatient deductible. You won't always find a deductible on every record in the MedPAR because if they're readmitted or transferred, the beneficiary is only charged one deductible for that episode. So you do find some zero populated field deductibles. Coinsurance, this really comes into play when you're looking at long-term care and inpatient rehab and psych hospitals because after certain days, coinsurance kicks in for that beneficiary. And again, the blood deductible. So if you wanted to know the total patient responsibility, you would have to sum up those three variables for the MedPAR stay record. And then lastly, if you want to know if there was another primary payer, there is a field for primary payer amount. A lot of you may say, I don't care, but this is still a very important field, and we'll talk more about that, particularly when we go into some of the exercises and looking at the data. So then if you want to know what is the total due to the provider, unfortunately, there's not just one variable that says, here's what the Medicare provider was due for this day. You actually have to sum the Medicare, all those variables for what Medicare was responsible for what the beneficiary was, and the primary payer amount. So there's five variables. You could also sum the DRG price, outlier amount, and pass-through amounts. But I would actually recommend just using number one. It's a little bit more consistent. Again, I would recommend if you're looking at costs to use the MedPAR, but if you happen to have the inpatient standard analytical file, again, here are the variables. These are the variable names found in the data dictionary. You have the claim payment amount. You, again, have a claim pass-through per diem amount. You have a claim utilization day count. You have an NCH beneficiary inpatient deductible amount, their co-insurance liability, and their blood deductible, and again, a primary payer amount. So if you're looking at to calculate using the inpatient standard analytical file how to calculate a total payment made by Medicare, you actually have to take the claim pass-through per diem amount and multiply it by the number of claim utilization day count, because that per diem field itself is just what that hospital will get reimbursed for every hospital day that that beneficiary is in the hospital for covered care or utilization days. So if I'm in the hospital 5 days the per diem for that hospital was 100, they actually get paid $500 for the pass-through amount and not just the 100. So be sure you use both variables. And then sum that additional amount to the claim payment amount to get the total payment made by Medicare. For the beneficiary, again, there's three variables, the deductible, the coinsurance, and the blood deductible. And you just need to sum those to get the total amount that the beneficiary is responsible for. And lastly, there's the one variable for the primary payer. So again, there's no nice variable that says this was the total due to the provider. So you do have to calculate it as the sum of all those variables for what Medicare reimbursement was, the beneficiary responsibility, and if there was another primary payer. There are revenue center, quote-unquote, payment variables in the inpatient standard analytical file. Unfortunately, they're not populated. They're all zero-filled. So for the inpatient file, you can only really make claim-level payment calculations. You can use cost-to-charge ratios with the revenue center. You do have charges at the revenue center line item. Faith will be talking about that tomorrow. The SNF file is very, very similar to the inpatient. It's all the exact variables, and again, it's true for SNFs. They too are on a PPS system. They don't break it out by the types of revenues that the skilled nursing facility is billing for, so you won't find any information at a revenue center level. So again, you can only analyze SNF payments at the claim level. If you're looking at home health, again, for the payment made by Medicare, here there's just the claim payment amount, the one variable. For a primary payer, there's the primary claim paid amount. And then when you get at the claim level, is there a payment made by what the beneficiary responsible for? The answer is no. There's no claim level variable. Anyone want to guess why there's no beneficiary responsible information in the home health care file? There's no copays, right? Medicare covers, so there's no copays. Now, that's not necessarily true for every single revenue center. There are some things that are, home health is a Part A service that's 100% covered by Medicare. There are a few Part B services when you have a mix of Part A and Part B that they have charged some coinsurance. There's nothing at the claim level because CMS never bothered with it, but there is something at the revenue center level. It's called revenue center coinsurance or the wage-adjusted coinsurance amount. There's two variables. It's populated less than 0.05% of the time. It's not populated a lot. It is there, so if you want to get down to the nitty-gritty, there are some amounts that a beneficiary is responsible for. But again, because of the payment system and what Medicare covers, it's not a variable that, you know, maybe you worry about. So if you look, again, to what the provider is due, you would have to sum the claim payment amount and the primary if you wanted to get down to beneficiary responsibility. To add that in, you'd have to go to the revenue center. For the outpatient file, Again, there's just the one variable for the claim payment amount, what Medicare reimbursed, and one variable for what a primary payer covers. Very similar to inpatient care, you have the same three variables that you need to sum for what the beneficiary had to pay for, the Part B deductible, the Part B coinsurance, and a blood deductible. So again, to get the total due, you'd have to sum up those five variables. Now, in the outpatient file, this is the very first file that I start really talking about what the variables are. I talked about the home health revenue center a little bit. You can find some payment amounts for those home health episodes of care that are low visits. So typically, again, home health care is paid for an episode, not per visit, unless you get to low utilization. And I believe that the count is four or less, and then they will actually pay you per visit. So it's not a calculated episode of care cost. So there are some variables in the home health care file when you get down to the revenue center that you can see payment information. Depending on what you're trying to do, is it important to get down to those levels? Because of the way home health care is paid, you only have a handful of revenue center HCPCS codes that are billed, because, again, it's an overall episode based on the number of visits. So do you worry about the revenue center, yes or no? Some people were worried about it. I'm going to give you the caveat. I'm not going to dwell on it. I'm just going to tell you like it is and let you have to be concerned about what you want to do. Unfortunately, when you sum revenue center payment amounts in any of these files, it doesn't always equal to the claim payment amount in the claim part of it. Now, again, that's the way it is. How you choose to handle it, I guess, is up to you. I'm going to be talking about costing procedures, and so we have to go to a line level or a revenue center level when you're looking at outpatient care. It's a difficult decision to make, and I can't tell you what the right way is. We've always been told trust the claim payment amount because that's in the end what the MAC cut the check for, and that maybe if there were adjustments, they didn't get equated back down to the revenue center or to the line item. However, that doesn't help you when you're trying to cost a particular service or a particular procedure that you need the revenue center information. You can do sensitivity analysis on it to really determine it. But I will tell you, I don't have an answer as to which way to go and why it really happens. But we do know that summing up the line item information or the payment information does not always equal what you're going to find in the claim level payment information, and that is a big issue when it comes to looking at costs of care, particularly when you're looking at specific procedures. Going back then to the outpatient payment variables that you can find at the Revenue Center if you are interested in particular HCPCS, again, keep in mind that for the outpatient, they're paid on APC, so even though you have each individual HCPCS billed, that HCPCS may have been bundled with another line HCPCS to get the payment only on one of those records. So if you're looking at claim payment, you might see HCPCS 1, 2, 3, 4 that has a payment, but then 5, 6, 7, 8 is 0. Well, if that was bundled with that same APC, it's really just a shared amount for both of those, and you can't get to the individual costs because they'll bundle it up. But if you are looking at the revenue centers in the outpatient standard analytical file, there is a revenue center payment amount. And again, if there was a primary payer, it's actually more than one variable. There's a revenue center first and second Medicare secondary payer amount. Again, if you're worried about whether they're a primary payer, I'd look at the claim level and just either throw them out if you don't want claims that are paid by another primary payer, or just use that amount. It's not really probably worth your time and trouble to do things at the revenue center for another primary payer. For the beneficiary, you do have a cash deductible. You have a blood deductible. You do have two variables for coinsurance. There's a revenue center coinsurance amount, and there's another one that's wage adjusted insurance amount, and then there's a reduced coinsurance amount. So there's quite a few variables when you look at the beneficiary when you get down to this level. Again, if you're really concerned for the cost of that claim, what is the beneficiary responsibility, I would just use the claim level. So now I'm going to talk about the carrier file, where you would find the physician information. Again, at the claim level, you'll find the claim payment amount and the primary payer amount. Then for the beneficiary, they don't really have it at the claim level, so you actually have to go to the line item if you really want the details broken down for the line coinsurance amount, and then sum it with the line beneficiary Part B deductible. There is a carrier claim cash deductible applied amount that you can use at the claim level if you want. And then, again, if you want to look at the provider due, you'd have to sum up all those variables for Medicare beneficiary and primary payer. If you're looking at comparisons of a particular procedure at the line level, you do have the physician specialty code right there on the line, so you would know the type of provider that did it to make comparisons of types of doctors. So for, again, the carrier, you can go down to the line level. It is populated. There is a line payment amount. There is the deductible. It was mentioned earlier when you're looking at costs, how can you know this is really the cost or what Medicare reimbursed, because there might be a deductible in January. So it's the very first visit you had. Maybe Medicare paid absolutely nothing on that because it was all the beneficiary's responsibility because of their deductible. And then again, coinsurance amounts. Now, for Part B, we know it's usually a standard 20% coinsurance amount. However, not all services provided under Part B are standard coinsurance amounts. So you do get a variety in there. So it is important to include that in looking at coinsurance amounts. Most things are a standard 20%. Lab has no coinsurance, so you'd never find a line coinsurance amount for a lab HCPCS. Some mental health, that has changed over the years. It started out as 50%. They've now trying to reduce it down to the 20% like other Part B costs. By 2014, it's supposed to be down to 20%, but it was a gradation. I believe it's 2010 is when they started reducing it. So you would see differences in coinsurance amount. And a lot of people are looking at that coinsurance amount and how it's affecting the use of mental health services. So again, coinsurance is something that you can study to see how that affects service usage. So as far as at the line level, again, you can look at the payment amount, the deductible, the coinsurance amount, and the beneficiary prior payment. But where it has, I earlier said, I don't care about charges. I'm going to say I don't care about using charges for institutions. I do care about charges in the carrier file. Why? Because there is a variable called allowed charge amount. That is not something that is submitted by the physician. It is a field that CMS calculates. Based on the fee schedule, they say this is all we're going to allow you to get paid, regardless of whether there's a primary payer or whatever. This is the allowed charge amount. And so that field is at the line level. It's also at the claim amount. Again, this applies only to Medicare-covered services. You will not find anything that's been denied having a large allowed charge calculated. So again, I'll talk about denied claims in a minute, but it is there. And this is actually a nice variable to use because it allows, it says basically this is the total that I'm allowed to collect from all sources, whether I have a primary, whether it's Medicare, or whether the beneficiary's piece of it. This is the total amount due to the provider. So if you want to, you can, you know, sum up all those different pieces that I talked about for the line level. You have what Medicare is responsible for, their reimbursement, what the beneficiary is responsible for, and if there was another primary payer. But we at ResDAC, or what I guess would recommend using, is just this allowed charge amount because it really is the total due to the provider. If you sum them up, it works. Now, again, you have issues between line items and claim level. It doesn't always match. But that is the one charge field in the Medicare claims data that I highly recommend using. There's still a submitted charge in the carrier file. That is what I would say don't use, again, because it's submitted by the physician. It doesn't matter what the physician really submits. And it's interesting, if you look at some of the submitted charges, sometimes it's less than what Medicare allowed. For something, it might be they just throw in $5 because they know that they're going to get an allowed charge, that it doesn't really matter what they submit. So again, that submitted charge field, don't bother using. That comes from the physician. But this allowed charge is the only charge field in any of the data sets that is actually calculated by Medicare and can be used. And it represents the total amount due to that provider from all sources. Any other questions then? Yes.
I have two questions. One, rather simple. Does each line have a corresponding CPT code?
So the question, does each line have a corresponding CPT code? In the outpatient file and in the carrier file, the answer is yes, because that's how they bill, by HCPCS. And you'll also find... And a CPT is just a level 1 HCPCS. So the field itself is called HCPCS code, and you'll look at that this afternoon. You will, again, find HCPCS codes in the outpatient, but maybe not a payment amount, again, because they pay on the APC, but you do see associated HCPCS. So, again, when you're looking at, I'm going to move on to charges, some other charges, because some of you may be interested in charges if you're looking at cost reports and at a high level of what hospitals do. There are charges in the files. So in the inpatient SAF, there is a claim level, claim total charge amount, and there's also an NCH inpatient non-covered charge amount. At the revenue center level, you have a revenue center total charge amount and a non-covered charge amount. So you can see if Medicare actually covered all the services on the actual bill. Oftentimes, you'll find non-covered charges because a person has exceeded the length of stay or that hospital is actually billing for something that Medicare doesn't cover. Yes?
A follow-up of the last question. So for procedure-related diagnosis and diagnosis codes, where would you find the variables for those?
So like in the inpatient where... Variables. Okay. You will find in the inpatient file, you'll know that they had what procedures they had, and they're based on ICD-9 procedure codes. But again, for inpatient, they don't pay that you get paid for, the CABG, and then if you happen to do, put some lasers in the heart for a TMR, you'll get paid for something more. You just know what procedures were done, but not what they were paid for that individual procedure, because again, it's paid on a DRG. So you can find procedure codes in the file, but you won't find associated payment variables with those procedures.
Diagnosis codes?
You'll find diagnosis codes in the file as well. There's still ICD-9 diagnoses. They haven't moved to ICD-10 yet.
So how about drugs used in the hospital?
So the question is, can I look at the cost of drugs or what drugs are used? The answer is no. Again, very seldom. You might find a revenue center charge for pharmacy, but you don't know specific drugs. You can use the Part D data if you're interested in looking at prescription drugs. Unfortunately, for this time period, we don't have time to talk about Part D. So if you're interested in looking at drugs and drug costs, I would recommend looking into our Part D workshop. So real quickly, try to get through this so you can go to lunch. Again, in the MedPAR file, there is a variable called the total covered charge amount, so you can look at that. This is the total amount that the provider charges for the service. Again, it's determined by the provider. And it has no rhyme or reason for what I consider, what a hospital charges. They certainly have rhyme and reason why they want to charge what they do, but it doesn't make a lot of sense, and that was why there was this uproar about this new file that came out with all the charges for particular DRGs. For the inpatient, there is the claim total charge amount, and you, again, have total charge amounts for the revenue center. MedPAR. Again, they have revenue center groupings that you could see pharmacy charges. You can look at occupational therapy charges. You can look at ICU charges. So they do have charges by all the different revenue center groupings that you can look at. Again, Faith, I'm going to let her really emphasize the charge fields. So again, the only charge field that you can really use is in the carrier file, and that is the allowed charge, and that's Medicare calculating what is allowed to be paid for the provider for that service. Now, overall, when you're analyzing the claims data, there are a lot of things to consider. You do find denied claims and or denied line items, and that can really impact if you're trying to calculate average cost of a particular service or things like that. So you really want to get rid of these claims. So the first thing that I always recommend and that we say in 101 too is once you get your data, just clear out the denied claims and any denied line items, because there's no necessarily, you can't look at them because one provider may submit all claims, whether they know they're going to get denied or not, and another may not. Oftentimes they're duplicates. So they've already been billed for. So if you're trying to count services, you could overcount services if you include denied claims or denied line items. So again, keep in mind you do have that. An example of why, again, it's important that if we wanted to know what the average amount for a particular HCPC in the carrier file, if I just say, you know, here's the claim payment amount, what's the mean for that, and I include all line items, it's going to come out for $36.95. But what was really paid, if I get rid of any denied claims, the average was $42.82. So it does make a difference in the prices if you include those, because anything that's denied will have a zero claim payment amount. It will also have a zero allowed charge amount. And you obviously don't want to include those in any kind of mean calculation, average calculations. At the claim level for institutional files, the variable that you should use to get rid of claims is the claim Medicare non-payment reason code. For like the outpatient file, they also have one at the Revenue Center. It's called the ANSI code, and there's, I think, up to five of them that you can see denied. Revenue Center charges, again, for institutional files, it's not quite as prevalent to have denied claims, a little bit more in the outpatient file, just given the nature that it's a Part B service. But again, I would certainly recommend getting rid of any denied or line items. And again, you can have zero payment amounts for services that are allowed. Depending on what it is that you want to do, you have to think about how are those zero payments going to happen. Now, why would you find that? Well, it could be due that there's another primary payer, so Medicare pays nothing for that service. So if you're more interested in what the provider was paid, then go to create your variable for the provider due to use that, because then what the zero field for what Medicare reimbursed is offset by what a primary payer paid. So you could do that. But if you're really trying to calculate models, what did Medicare reimburse, and interested in what Medicare, you have to be considered what you're going to do with these zero payment amounts. And again, it can also be due to deductibles. So I go see my physician. He charges me for an E&M code, an evaluation for the office visit, but it's January 2nd. It's the first of the year. I'm going to have a deductible. Chances are I have to pay for the whole covered cost of that service because of my deductible. So again, depending on what it is you're trying to calculate, think about what happens when you have zero payment amounts. There's also negative payment amounts. Now, your question is, how does Medicare negatively pay somebody? The reason why you would find negative payments amounts is because all these different pieces, what Medicare reimburses, what if there's a primary payer, what the beneficiary is responsible for, all of those total to either this DRG price or what what the provider is due. And so depending on who was responsible for it, it could show up as a negative amount of responsibility for Medicare. you can see negative amounts in the inpatient file. Typically that occurs when the beneficiary is charged a full deductible, but maybe they were only in the hospital for one day and the service that they had was less than what the deductible is. So then, Medicare still collects the full deductible from the beneficiary regardless of what the cost of that DRG price was or what the providers do. And so then it shows up as a negative amount to the Medicare reimbursement field. So you can see negative amounts for that purpose. You can also see it if you have transfers. So the deductible may be on the first hospital claim, but there's no deductible in the second. But that first hospital really didn't do too much other than transfer the patient to a different hospital because they needed different types of services than that hospital can provide. The other reason it happens, and this, again, really happens with long-term care hospitals and inpatient rehab hospitals, is that if I'm in the hospital long enough for my coinsurance to kick in, that coinsurance amount gets to be pretty excessive for the beneficiary, and so it shows up as a negative amount for Medicare. Again, all these pieces have to equal what Medicare says the provider is due. And so which bucket it lands in, it may end up into a negative amount for that. And we'll have some claims data that you could look at for some of these to look at some of these negative charges. And you'll see that typically for long-term care and IRF hospitals, it's usually because the coinsurance exceeds the amount that Medicare pays for that stay. Any questions about negative amounts? But you as a researcher, depending on what it is that you're doing, how do you want to handle these zero and negative amounts? Do you really want to say, that Medicare paid a negative amount for a procedure? Or do you want to drop the floor at zero or, something else to determine what you're going to do? So there are these fields that have negative amounts or zero amounts that you have to decide depending on what you want to do, how to handle them. Other things to look at for those of you that are interested in like the inpatient or the skilled nursing facility or home health, I told you what their payment system was based on. If you actually wanted to know what the CMG was or for that HIPS or that RUG code, the case mix index, for these different ones, you can find out what that actual case mix, the CMG was. It's embedded in particular revenue centers, depending on the type of facility it is. So for revenue center code 0024, that's on every claim for an inpatient rehab facility, you'll find the CMB embedded into that line item, that revenue center item PICS field, but it's actually the CMG that's embedded. And same for skilled nursing facility and home health. You can find the RUG embedded for revenue center codes in the HIC in the field for that, for 0022 for skilled nursing facilities, and 0023. You can find the HHRG, which is embedded into the HIPS code in the revenue center. So you can kind of look at what the payment system was, what they used to generate that payment for these different types of facilities. There are some other variables that you'll find that, like, people think, ooh, this is really, really great. I've talked about the fact that there's no variable that says this is the total that the provider was due to be paid, but there is a variable called provider payment amount. You would think, hey, that's what the provider is supposed to get paid for this service. The answer is no. There's also a variable called beneficiary payment amount. What these fields are, so they're just basically, think about these fields as who did Medicare write a check out to and what was the amount. So if I go to my provider and he bills me directly, my provider payment amount is probably going to be exactly the same amount as the claim payment amount because the MAC is actually paying and cutting the check to the provider. But there are some providers, some physicians in the carrier that don't want to bill. They make the beneficiary submit the bill, and they get their check from the beneficiary. Well, Medicare doesn't want to reimburse the provider for that because it's the beneficiary that's already paid the provider. So when this claim is submitted, Medicare knows to pay the provider. So you'd see, in that case, a zero amount in the provider payment amount field. Well, no, you'd find a zero in the provider payment amount because Medicare did not pay the provider, but then you'd see the $250 in the beneficiary payment amount field because the beneficiary actually paid the provider for that service. So I just recommend not, you know, using these. They really don't have a lot of meaning, and they can get confusing to what you want to do. But, you know, if you were just going through the data dictionary, you'd say, boy, these sound pretty darn good, but unfortunately they're not. Other examples, there was a question then, what's the relationship between the carrier file and the inpatient file or some of these other files? Keep in mind, depending how things get billed, you may have to, for a hospitalization, go into more than one file to look at the total cost of that hospitalization. So we're going to look at a MedPAR record where a person was admitted on the 8th and had a discharge date of the 12th. They had a fracture, had some other secondary diagnosis, some heart problems, and they had an open reduction of fracture with internal fixation. So basically, they fixed the fracture. And we had revenue center codes for pharmacy. We had supplies, physical therapy. We also maybe had lab, radiology, anesthesia. So we had a total charges of $42,361 for this MedPAR record. And what Medicare paid for it, based on the pass-through amount plus the reimbursement amount, was $13,000. Now, as a researcher, if you're looking at costs, someone may say, well, the hospital said that it cost them $42,000 for this, but is that really your definition of cost? No, the cost really, or what the Medicare would say the cost was the $13,068 to them. And then there was a deductible. And so the provider due is a lot different from what they charge. But this doesn't tell the whole story because we know that the inpatient or the MedPAR file is based only on the facility claims. We know that that person probably had a surgeon and an anesthesiologist. So we also know that through this time frame, they had a claim that was on the 7th. It had one line item. The specialty code was emergency medicine. So we know this person actually started out in the ER. They had an injury to the hip, a fractured femur. So they had an emergency department visit that had a claim payment amount of $132 with a deductible of $33. And they also then had another claim that had a claim from and through date on the 8th and 9th. It had an orthopedic surgeon. And so they had a diagnosis, again, of a fracture and an initial hospital care visit, open treatment, and so on and so forth. So, again, she obviously hurt herself on the right side, had another claim payment of $996 with a deductible of almost $250. And then we had some more claims that were in the carrier file for a certified nurse anesthesiologist. Again, she billed for her services with additional payments and co-pays and deductibles. And then we had a diagnostic radiology claim with a professional component in the modifier with a claim payment of $28, deductible, so on and so forth. So that whole hospital care episode had five additional claims from the carrier file. So if you only care looking at what is going on with hospitals, it's okay to just look at the MedPAR or the inpatient file. But if you want to know a total cost of a care of a particular procedure, you may have to go to more than one record. Now, typically we say the carrier file is the other one you have to go to. Now, think about critical access hospitals. I said because they're not PPS paid, they're PPS exempt, you might have to go to the outpatient file maybe to see some services or the carrier file as well. So they have a different way, a number of files that you may need to look at. For instance, if you're looking for the total episode of this, maybe she needed home health care afterwards, or maybe it was serious enough that she went into an inpatient rehab facility for a few days. So you have to look for another record. So you have to define what your episode is. Are you only looking at the cost of that hospital for that particular procedure, or are you looking for the whole cost of that episode of care? Who are you looking for the total cost for? So on and so forth. So oftentimes, you do have to look in more than one file and get to create episodes of care for total costs for something. So that is something that you do have to consider. Does Does that answer your question, Adam? Okay, good.
So this example was based on the MedPAR data set. I have a question. In part of your discussion just now, you said what we just went through reflects on the inpatient and the MedPAR data sets. But in the inpatient, if somebody had an ER visit and then was admitted, doesn't that show up in the inpatient file?
Right. So this example that I talked about is actually a combination of the MedPAR and the carrier. Let's say that you are interested in whether this person, we know that this person started through the ER. I only gave an example of what their carrier costs were, but that in this case, she started through the ER and her ER services ended up on that inpatient MedPAR claim. But let's say I was looking for cost of services that someone was admitted to an ER and then went home. That ER visit would be found in an outpatient facility, but then I still may have the ER doc in the carrier file. So for that ER visit itself, so if you're looking at what is the cost of ER care, I still would have to go to two ones because I'm going to have the hospital outpatient facility ER visit as well as still the physician or whatever, whoever they saw or what other things were done. Now, again, you know, how far do you want to go? In the carrier file, you'll find an ambulance. This person may have, you know, fallen and couldn't get herself to the care, had to get an ambulance. Do I consider ambulance claims as part of an episode of care or the cost for this surgery? So you have to really decide what you want to include in an episode to consider that. Lastly, the last slide, just to again emphasize, depending on what your research is, understanding the payment system will help you understand what kind of payment variables you'll have. So I've talked about that you won't find any revenue center payment information for inpatient or SNF because that's not how the payment system works. So looking at inpatient SNF and even at some level home health care, I would say only analyze at the claim level. You can look at service level information for the outpatient, the carrier, and the DME.